For June the 11th, 2021, we talk about Knockout City, Slipways, and we ask you what stats you wish games kept track of for you. Welcome to Level 374. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Back after a last minute week off. It got to be game day, and it was like, oh, are we taking the day? Are we taking the week off? Like, oh yeah, it is Memorial Day. Let's do that. So thank you for your patience, everybody. as we took some time for ourselves, I for one used it to get a bunch of stuff done around the house. This is actually the first episode of The Level recorded in the new studio, by which I mean I moved my recording setup to a smaller bedroom where the sound is easier to control.
So is this setup 2.0, or have I missed iterations since you've lived there?
This is room 2.0. The setup has changed a couple of times because I'm pretty much always messing with the equipment in some form or fashion. Gotcha. But yeah, this is recording studio 2.0. I decided to move my bedroom into the master bedroom because, you know, a queen size bed in a bedroom that is 10 foot by 9 foot is actually a pretty sucky thing. It's like not good. And it's a literal
interpretation of bedroom. So
yes, the room was mostly bed. So I've optimized things a little bit more. But that's all that I've had going on. Dennis and Ben, you two weren't here last time. It was just David Jala and me. So Dennis, what's going on? You got any stories for us?
Sure. Yeah. We have crossed into pool season since I've been on the podcast.
So you're playing some billiards?
Yes, exactly. Little capital T troubled pool, right? And I think I might not have even been on the podcast since we took our vacation. I can't remember, but
maybe. Yeah.
We went to Oak Island in North Carolina, stayed in a house that was like a block off the beach, and it was perfect. We had a pool in our backyard for the rented house, and the kids were fishes. Like they spent all their time in that. And we went and visited the beach, we did the beach thing, we swam in the ocean. But no one in our family is really like a beach person.
That's I do not understand that person. Grew up in a family full of beach people, and I do not understand why you would travel all of that distance to get right to the edge of the land and the ocean is right there and you're not spending the entire day in the water.
Because the water is fundamentally where evil lives.
Well, I mean, not that. Only a little bit, not like the shallow water.
I saw the crap that washes up on shore. Think about it.
You have birds, which are delightful and, you know, loving, and then you add water and you end up with geese that are pure hell spawn.
The math checks out.
Do you guys remember that emoji game where like the only thing you would do is match two icons and then they might make another icon that was kind of the combination? And so who knew that bird plus water?
You mean writing?
just with way more hieroglyphs, characters. I think you call what we write. Are letters characters? Sure.
It's like writing, but with more emojis.
I should know this. I just finished kindergarten. So so we did the vacation. It was a blast. The kindergarten let out, and so we are full-time summer now, and then we got a membership to our neighborhood pool for the first time this year, and have been as many days as not since it's opened, and that is a real good time.
Nice.
And surprisingly, like a warm Friday, which was like the second day that the pool was open, It was pretty accommodating. Like there were not a ton of people there.
Mm-hmm.
So we hit like midday on a Saturday. There was a good crowd, but as long as you're not right there at the peak time on a weekend, it's actually pretty spacious.
Nice.
So yeah, we feel like we've got the run of the place, and I think we'll kind of be living there this summer.
Have you had to like get lessons for the kids, or are they kind of just hanging out in the kiddie pool and shallow end? Like how enthusiastic are they about the venture?
Yeah, hyper enthusiastic. The spirit is willing. The technical skills, the body is weak.
Yeah.
They'll splash around in the 3-foot zone all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And the last time we were there, they started striking out into the deeper end to practice swimming, which is really fun to be teaching them that and all. But neither of them really gets it yet. So they've got the little swimmies that they wear.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are all about it, and they would never leave if they had their way. So it's been a good thing.
Nice.
And it's not a beach, so I'm happy to be there.
Not dragging sand with you everywhere you go.
Oh my God. Yeah. We didn't even cover that piece of the beach.
Nice.
Yeah. You've got to watch out for those, dragon sands. Yeah. Breathing fire and.
Okay. Ben, how about you? You've been doing some traveling too.
Yeah, I went down to Portland for a week for one of my college roommates' weddings, and that was really nice. It was a very what you would expect out of a Portland wedding. We went on a hike, and then they got married after the hike.
Oh,
the bride damn. Hiked in her wedding dress and got pictures taken. It was great. And it was like raining while we were doing this as well. But it was like super pretty. We drove around, I forget the name of the river, but it's like the river that's like just east of Portland. And like, there's just like long, like hour highway drive where you're just driving by this like giant river, and it's really like mountainous and stuff. So it's really picturesque, but, yeah, so it was a good time. And then I got to see some old coworker friends from Vegas that came into town. So I spent a weekend with them, and yeah, now I'm back to the grind.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. David, how about you? What's going on?
Not a ton. Had some friends over weekend before last. So basically people in my LARP group came over to kind of do a somewhat in character, but somewhat just kind of hanging out tea party at the so the local artist commune has a D&D themed coffee house.
Okay.
Called Dragonforge, and you can rent it out for tea parties. So it was basically all us dressing up nerdy style and drinking tea and eating fancy cakes and whatnot.
Okay.
So what does it mean to be part in character, part out? Like, what did that look like?
Well, I guess what I mean is it was in character. It wasn't like an overt, like, LARP event. Like, no one was sword fighting or anything. But, everyone was dressed up and, kind of that sort of stuff.
So how much do you interact with these people out of character?
Actually, a fair amount. Because there's, at least for our group, a lot of people in our group, like, are almost all sewing students. So there's a significant amount of like the crafting is the LARP is an excuse for the crafting.
Yeah.
So there's, a lot of that and just kind of, hanging out. The other thing we actually did is one of the local breweries bought a middle school and converted it into like a hipster restaurant thing. So like, I don't know, what would be like food trucks, except they're not trucks, they're restaurants. I don't know. And then kind of the centerpiece of it is a speakeasy. So, one of the ways if you slide one of the rows of lockers to the side, there's an entrance to the bar.
You're revealing the secrets, dude.
You know. I feel like that all statute of limitations with prohibition being revealed.
Right. Okay. You could have been a few decades to a century. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, hopefully there's a statute of limitations on snitches get stitches.
Right. Right.
But, the stitches just get smaller.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, if you're with a sewing group, they're going to be having stitches anyway.
Exactly. See, it all works out in the end.
Nice. Nice.
So yeah, that's been pretty much it for me.
Cool.
BT Dubs, I like that a requirement of LARPing is that there has to be a sword fight somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there has to be random adventure shenanigans.
Oh, that's sweet. Man. Nice. Yeah, well, I think that we're caught up. I've got a shake of the cobwebs off. I feel whenever we take a week off, it always feels like it has been forever since we've done this. But we can.
What's a podcast?
Yeah, I know, right?
Let's see if you can get the order down.
Yeah, that's always the test, isn't it? So I think we should do the normal kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Let's see here. Dennis.
I think Dennis went away farther than I did, so he should be first.
I think he did, yeah.
I did not know there was a subcategorization there. It's sword
tough.
Column.
It's tough when you have two. Usually I look and see who went first when you were both on the last time, and then I flip them. There actually is an algorithm that I follow.
Okay. If you start a distance thing, we're going to be beholden to it. That's a lot of responsibility.
Right. So, Dennis, I don't care. I don't need a reason.
That means Cole saw the algorithm that he made, and I was the one who was going first anyway.
Dennis, go on ahead. What have you been playing?
Yeah, I've been playing a ton of a new game called Knockout City, which is a dodgeball game that released, 2 weeks ago at this point or so?
This was a PS Plus free thing?
It was a free for everyone thing. So that's one of the interesting things that they did is when they launched, the first week was just the game was free for everyone.
Okay.
They called it like the block party and you just, anyone could get the game, play it as if it was the full game. Not that a free week or a free weekend is a revolutionary thing, but for a game that is exclusively multiplayer, that was a very good idea, especially, new IP, not a completely unknown studio, but, it wasn't coming from Riot or anything. So,
yeah.
It was a good decision to have it available for free for everyone. And I don't think I waited more than 10 seconds for a match, in these entire 2 weeks. So that's been great.
So dodgeball.
Yeah. Dodgeball. Well, first off, the name is Knockout City and no one calls it that. Everyone just calls it dodgeball. play some dodgeball. Like I hope they didn't invest a ton into trademarking Knockout City or anything like that, because I've literally never seen it referred to as that. Outside of my initial introduction. It is very traditional dodgeball in a sense. Like you run around and pick up dodgeballs and they even look like dodgeballs. You throw them at your opponents. If you hit an opponent twice, they're out. And they respawn.
Okay.
And first team to 10 outs wins. And on the face of things, it's incredibly simple. Like, if you have a ball, you can throw it at someone or you can pass it to your teammate. And if you don't have a ball, you can either dodge or catch. And everything else is gravy. Like that is 99.9% of the game right there. Mechanics wise, like if you're reading the graph of buttons, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. But the multiplayer component of this and the team component of this, like any good competitive multiplayer game, takes something that's very simple and easy to understand on the surface and then just makes it incredibly deep and complex. The most interesting thing for me is that there is no aiming in Knockout City. Everything is lock-on. So as long as your opponent is remotely close to you, they'll be highlighted, the camera will follow them, And you don't have to worry about whether or not you're going to hit. You can literally, the aiming is done for you. And I shouldn't say you don't have to worry about whether or not you will hit. I should say you have to be worried about whether or not you're on target. Because, as long as there's a clear line of sight the way you're throwing, the ball will even follow the person as they move. And it actually moves pretty slow. So on the first throw, the ball is very easy to catch. You can do it. That's almost kind of assumed a lot of the time. If you're throwing at someone who knows you're there, they're probably going to catch the ball. But when you catch a ball, if you kind of catch it with the right timing, it'll speed it up.
Okay.
And that's where the game gets interesting is, the more times a ball is caught and thrown, the faster it gets. You can also add a level of charge for passing to a teammate. And so kind of teamwork is encouraged and built in. Go ahead.
Do you need coordination when you're passing to a teammate? Like, do they need to press catch or do they get hit by it or anything?
No, they automatically catch.
Okay. Is it visually shown like how charged up the ball is?
Yes, you can see. Well, so if you are holding it, you can see a number of carrots next to the ball, not like edible carrots, but the, chevron-esque style things that show how many times it's been charged. If you are looking at someone who's got a ball, you can generally see a pink glow if it's past the first level of charge. But other than that, you have to count. Okay. At that point, things are going back and forth fast enough that kind of keep them like, they went to like, all right, 1, 2, 3, 4, got them. It takes up pretty quickly and is relatively easy to keep track of. That's if you're going back and forth between one person. The other thing that gets crazy is, of course, switching between who you're targeting or passing to a teammate instead of throwing. Oh, the other cool thing is if your teammate is already holding a ball, you'll just bounce it off of them back to you and still get the level of charge. So passing has utility even then. And since everything is lock-on, it's all about managing your opponent's attention. So do they know I'm there? Are they looking at me? Where are my teammates in relationship to them? Can I do something that they don't expect to throw them off kilter? Can I get them to try to catch before I've thrown? You can pump fake before you throw. You can throw in a curve. That helps you either kind of shoot around obstacles or just mixes up the timing of when the ball will hit and what direction it's coming from. And all of that, like I said, it's just dodgeball. Like, you don't have to look at any rules. There's no, everyone who jumps in intuitively gets what's going on. But the myriad ways you can mix it up, especially with a team, make it really, really fun to play.
Hmm.
Knockout City, I've been very fortunate in that most of the times when I'm playing with a full group. So it's the main mode is 3v3. The times I've not had a full group or not had someone to play with have been very few and far between. And that's definitely the way to go because solo queuing is okay. There's also a 1v1 mode, which is just pure torture. Because again, in terms of attention, there's nothing to distract their attention. It's just very slow and very calculated and it always comes down to kind of, kind of these quick, you get so on top of each other that then you just can't react in time. And it almost always feels like random chance at the end in solo mode. So having a team there kind of spreads things out, keeps things more interesting and is definitely the way what the game was designed for.
Yeah.
I think people would be mad if there wasn't a solo mode. But now that they've been given what they would have asked for, it's
like, that's just not how this game was designed. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, here it is. We know that we need to have this, but it's definitely not what, knockout. I almost said it's not what dodgeball is for. It's not what Knockout City is for. I've played a ton of that. Even after the trial week, I immediately bought the game. And the friends I was playing with have done so as well. So anyone who likes multiplayer games, it is more likely than not I am on that right now if I'm gaming.
Yeah.
I mentioned kind of the free trial period. Now it's got kind of your standard battle pass thing, except you're not buying for a season. At least I don't think you are. I think you just buy the game outright, and then the kind of convention for getting new cosmetics within the game is that kind of battle pass, level up and get stuff. The cool thing is that you don't get a fixed item at every level. which means you see way more variety in people's outfits. So, you know, for a lot of games with that kind of battle pass, you know, the last item or the last, you know, tier of an item at the very end of the battle pass is what everyone's rushing to. And then everyone has to, you know, wear that to show that they're cool and did the thing.
Right.
With this, at a given level, it'll be like, all right, you'll get an outfit or a, you know, an icon or whatever, a taunt, but it's randomized what taunt or icon or outfit you get. And so there, you know, there are tiers of rarity, but within that, it's like, you know, everyone just kind of does what they want instead of feeling beholden to whatever the designers decided was the end game.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
The art style is it's like very, it's Fortnite meets rockabilly.
Huh, so that makes sense based on what I'm looking at. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't notice it as much now because the game is so good, but it was a little bit abrasive to me the first couple times I played. It was just like, I don't know. It was so what you would expect a battle pass game to look like that it almost felt cynical.
You know, it almost kind of looks like Sunset Overdrive to me.
Yeah, that's another good reference point for sure. Yeah, and I think that the Fortnite meets rockabilly is the area that Sunset Overdrive plays in as well. You know, so it's inoffensive. The outfit design is fun.
I'm sorry, that is the worst compliment I've ever heard.
Well, especially because it was offensive the first couple times I played. So I've gotten Stockholm syndrome for the visual design. Here's the other damnation by weak praise that I'll give is like the visual design does not get in the way of the gameplay. Like it's everything stays very visually clean and crisp and understandable while you're playing. But the soundtrack absolutely slaps. Like this is an amazing soundtrack and so much fun to listen to. So turn that sucker up while you're playing. There's a really annoying DJ. They establish at the beginning of the game that the DJ that's constantly in your ear is broadcasting from the moon and give no reason why.
Okay.
It's just like, it's literally like wizards on the moon, DJs on the moon. And then I promptly found where I could turn him off in the audio options and have not listened to him since.
Right.
Cause he has like an extended bark at the beginning of every game, but they only recorded like three. So it is insufferable after a bit. But like I said, I turned it off and you can too.
Right.
So this do that and I can recommend every single thing about this game. Play it with a friend, but be prepared to lose a lot of hours to it. It is a really fun game.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else can I say? Yeah, they rotate every week. They kind of introduce new modes so that you've got your standby modes that are not going to change, and then there's just new creative things. So one of the more cartoony things about the game is if you don't have a ball but you have a teammate, one of you can ball up and be thrown as a ball,
do a fastball special.
That's awesome.
and it's got this great kind of risk reward thing, because if the teammate or if your opponent catches your teammate, they have to like mash a button to get out. And the opponent can throw your teammate back before they finish mashing. So that can put you in a world of hurt real quick, because if you're hit with a teammate, it doesn't matter if you've been hit yet or not. It counts as two hits. So that's a one-hit kill.
Hmm.
You can also, if you charge them all the way up, you can kind of do a lob shot. They call it the ultimate. It's not that powerful a move, but you basically launch them like artillery. Which is great for a scouting. And then if you can catch someone in like the blast when you land, it's also a one hit kill.
Yeah.
So that's throwing your friends around the map is a lot of fun. And there's even like creative ways that the people have used that. So I've seen, like you throw one friend, but they break the throw midair. As long as you haven't been caught, you can break the throw at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're way high up in the air. And then you throw a second friend to that teammate in the air. And then they are like a circling AC-310, whatever it is, giant warplane up in the air, just launching death down from above. So there's a lot of cool and kooky things you can do with the game.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. That's Knockout City. It is a blast. And then the other game I've been continuing to play is Slay the Spire. so you, it's been so long since we've been on, you, mm-hmm. you might remember, I went back to the game just to finish it with the defect. I hadn't gotten the true ending with that character yet. And that was the final one of the main three characters. And Ben, you had asked that question about the Watcher, right? Like, oh, have you beaten the game with the Watcher? And I said then, and I stand by, like, screw that. That is a, I did not like playing that at all. I'm not going to bother with that. And then
you'll come around one day.
No, yeah, your question then stuck in my mind, and I went back and beat it with the Watcher.
is that the little cabal guy?
That day's today, huh?
Yeah, that day was last week. It's the lady with the really long staff that changes modes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
It is. I still am not a fan of the character. But I at least figured it out before. It was like, I don't like. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, never mind. I was going to make a lame joke. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I love me some dad jokes. Yeah. Before it was like, all right, I don't like this character, and I'm misunderstanding something. So screw this. I'm not playing with it. Now it's at least like, all right, I understand this character. Still not a huge fan of it, but I understand it.
Yeah.
But I have
just become enlightened, then kill everything.
Yeah. every character has a couple different mechanics, and one of it is, I think they call it, is it enlightenment? It's like
it might divine. Be Nirvana, maybe, or Nirvana. Divinity. Yeah, divinity.
It's one of those. Yeah, something. You get the kind of theme of what it's called. I could not find a build that I liked that utilized that. I pretty much ignored that was a becoming enlightened or reaching divinity was a mechanic. All my successful runs.
There's nothing that does it like really quickly because it's so powerful. So you kind of have to go through your deck a couple times to like get there.
Yeah, and it's like so then it's good against bosses and nothing else, and like, you know, good against bosses, but just, you know, extra cards you have to burn through, clogging up your deck and in the rest of play is not, you know, how you want to go. You want something that feels viable no matter what.
It's definitely one of the more complicated characters to play, I think, just because of like the state changes you have to be really on top of. And if you like, if you make a mistake, like a simple one where it's like you're in like fury or whatever, you just can die very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. If you get stuck in the deal 2x damage and take 2x damage mode, and you're like, oh, I was counting on drawing a card to get me out of this turn, and it didn't come. You just die. And that can happen real quick. Like, I had runs where I felt very powerful, very well set up, and then just one bad draw and it was over.
Yep.
Which I think that's kind of hits at why I didn't like the character. But the build that wound up doing it for me, the run that got me all the way through, I had three copies of a card called Talk to the Hand, which you attack an enemy. And then every time after that you attack an enemy, you gain block for attacking them. And so you get offense plus defense. And when you play that card, it exhausts. So it comes out of your deck and thins your deck to get to other stuff. And versus a boss at that point, you know, once I've played three, I'm now getting 9 block every time I attack. On top of any other effects, right? So, you know, a typical playing a card to gain block, the base one is like 5 blocks. So I'm getting double block for free every time I attack, and then just built the deck to attack a bunch, and that was an easy way to win.
Slay the Spire is like one of the first games where like I felt most confident when I first beat the game a few times, and then since then my confidence have like plummeted and plummeted, seeing how many random like decks are like so effective, and like cards that I thought were completely like valueless could be like bombs in the right deck build.
Yeah, it is so interesting. And I did some reading to kind of help me understand. And yeah, the stuff that people are like, oh my God, use this, it's broken. And it's like, I ignored that every time I saw it because it sounded like crap.
Yeah,
is very fun. But so yeah, I probably won't play much more. I'm going to jinx myself, but I probably won't play much more Watcher past just getting the ending. But I did then go back to the defect, which is the one I'm closest to 20th Ascension with. And I'm now doing the harder Ascension runs with that. So it's got me back into the game. It's been enjoyable.
What did I say to make you play the character?
What's that?
To play the Watcher? Yeah.
You said, I think you just, you asked if I was going to beat it, and I said, hell no.
I see. Okay. So just that.
You challenged his manliness.
Yeah, you just planted a little bug.
All right.
Yeah, there was no redeeming qualities that you put out for it. I think you asked, like, are you going to finish it? And I was like, nope, not interested, not fun a character. And I stand by that, but I did finish it. So, yeah, that's me this week.
Cool. Yeah. Knock out City and slay the Spire. Let's see. Ben, how about you?
I got a good number of stuff. Good number of things. I think I have like four or five things to talk about.
Okay.
So I'll knock some small ones out of the way first and then talk about bigger ones. I picked up and started playing a small puzzle game called Room to Grow, which is a game where you play as a cactus that is growing out of a pot, but it's like an abstract, like line type puzzle. Like the gimmick of it is if you push against a wall, you like move your entire body in a direction. And so okay. The point of it is I don't even know if I know the point of it. The point of it is like you're trying to get your body like aligned in a position where there's like things on the ground that you need to touch.
Okay.
And so it's a very like, I don't know. It's just like it kind of reminds me of like Pipe Push Paradise, where it's like a simple abstract concept, but then it has a very like cutesy theme on top of it. It's 2D instead of 3D though. But yeah, I only played like half an hour of that, but it's fun. I'll probably go back to that when I have some free time. Not going to go into much further than that unless there's any questions about it. But
I love this art style.
Yeah, it's cute. Onward, I started playing a game called Slipways. I played this a little bit more. I played this for like 10 or 12 hours.
Okay.
This is, again, like another weird abstract game. It's a space-themed one, and basically all you're doing is you're setting up trade connections between planets. And it feels very akin to like a board game mechanic, where it's like a procedurally generated galaxy. You have to kind of like probe at the edges to reveal what planets actually exist there.
Okay.
And then after you've done that, you can take an action to like colonize a planet and determine what its function is. So for example, like there's like industrial planets where you can say, I want an input being ore, like red rock ore, and I want the output to be a robot. Or I want the input to be a red rock ore, and I want the output to be like conveyor belts. And so you choose that at one point, and then you draw connections between planets, slipways, the name of the game. And that basically makes it so you can trade resources between them. And so it's this like economy game of you're trying to have a planet have all the inputs it needs, but then also deliver all the outputs it needs. Okay. And it's like, it's seldom the case where you can kind of get a perfect, like harmonious thing everywhere. More often what the strategy is looking around in your circle of like where you've expanded and figuring out what is the best path forward at any edge there and try and do that.
Right.
Every action takes an amount of time. It's like colonizing a planet takes like 3 months. Drawing a slipways is like 1 month, and probing is like 1 month. And so there's like an economy where at the year end, you get paid out for things. So like whatever your happiness is, it'll go up or down.
Okay.
Like whatever your money is, you'll get paid out for that. So sometimes you need to plan judiciously, like, if I build this planet here, if I colonize this planet, I won't have any connections to it yet. So my happiness is going to go down there. So I might need to wait until the beginning of the year before I do that. And that sort of thing. So that can kind of determine the order of operations. This is definitely a more complicated type puzzle game than the one I was talking before, where the puzzle game I was talking before is very abstract. There's usually a clear solution. Mm-hmm. That's right. With Slipways, it's very vague. But it's interesting though. And like the planets like all have like a happiness level based on like how much you're importing and exporting to them. And so like, yeah, the more you're utilizing the planet, the happier they are. And yeah, on top of that, you have like advisors, which are like the alien races. It's very similar to like space themed board games that I've played. The ones I'm thinking of are like Twilight Imperium or like Eclipse, things like that. And it kind of is in the same wheelhouse where there's an alien race that's blue colored and focused on tech. And that seems to be true across all space games.
Usual shorthand. Yeah.
There's an alien with a visor where you can't see their face because it's filled with gas or water or something. You know, it's like there's a lot of there's a lot of like tropes like that in the game, so it's not really branching out art style wise. But what you do with these advisors is that determines like your tether round that you have. And so that determines like what possible upgrades you can get. But it's randomized like what actual tech is unlocked. So run to run is different. And then on top of that, there's like goals, like mini goals that you have. So an advisor will say like, hey, if you do this, you can get 5 victory points or whatever. And if you do this, you get 11 victory points. Really what it is like you get a certain points based on how many of these things you have. There's like a weird economy to it. And so you can do this throughout the game and they get progressively harder. If you leave any of them unfulfilled, you get docked points for that. And the overall goal is they do a good job of capping the game where you only play for 25 years since like each action costs an amount of time. So a run might be like 2 to 3 hours maybe, and it's pretty hard capped there. And so that's like a selling point of the game is it's like, hey, this isn't going to waste your life.
Nice.
You can get in and get out if you want to. It's a weird way that the game introduces it to you is you can play free play at the start and you have to get a 3-star rating out of 5 before you unlock the campaign of the game where you actually start doing missions and stuff. So it's like a weird way to tutorialize the game for you, where it's like, we're not going to give you the game until you can actually make sure that you
we're
understand
not going
the rules
to put
a little bit
like expectations on you until you have, through your own experimentation, figured out how stuff works together, right?
Yeah. I guess being maybe cynical about it is it's a very like low development cost way to show you the game, I guess, because you're not like investing time in making like a tutorial or anything.
Yeah.
But that's fine. Anyway, it's an interesting puzzle game. I don't really have a good evaluation of it, of like where it stands in the pantheon of puzzle games yet, but it's at least interesting for now.
This looks badass.
It's interesting. And it's one of those things where it's like, it could fall apart if like their strategy, like there's like a winning strategy every time or something like that. But for the most part, it's pretty tricky. The one thing is like, sometimes you just need to like hard restart, and I've done that more than I think I've done in other puzzle games where it's like, I messed up. This planet's unhappy. They're never going to be happy. Like, I'm going to bounce. Because it's super punishing. If you have like an unhappy planet, like it'll be like something like -1% to happiness or whatever. And it pays out every year like that. So like one mistake will kind of accumulate. And like very seldomly do you get like +1% happiness or +2% happiness. Usually you're sitting at +0 and just kind of waiting. And the reason why that's important is at the end of the game, like your happiness is a multiplier for your score essentially. So like I've had games where, you know, I have this like vast empire and it's great, but my happiness is at 50%. So like my score is halved and I get like, you know, like a 2-star rating or something like that. But anyway. It's interesting, and it's made by like a single developer. I found about it through John Blow. I think he backed it as far as like Indie Game Fund, and he was playing it on stream. So,
oh, nice.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is really new. This just came out like less than a week ago.
Yeah, it was in early access for the past like half year to a year or so, and so I'd seen a couple of people play it like maybe half a year ago. It wasn't open. It was early access, but it was like closed beta sort of thing. So I saw streamers play it, but it wasn't open for like the public to play.
Right.
And so the fact that I saw people playing it again during release made me want to try it out since it seemed like there was something there.
Nice.
But all right, two more games. Let's go. Subnautica Below Zero. I beat it. It's cool. It's Subnautica. It's fun. I think they fixed a lot of like minor issues in the last game. The geography of the map is like a lot more interesting than the first game. It doesn't feel like there's much wasted space at all. Like you're basically going from like pretty unique biome to pretty unique biome. There's not too many reused areas. Whereas like in the first game, it's like, all right, we have like 5 templates. We're going to kind of scatter those across this like giant area. They don't really do that as much. It's more kind of focused and deliberate in this game. So that part's good. I think there's still a part that needs a bit of improvement in the game where like following the campaign is like pretty rough because you'll get like 1 or 2 lines of dialogue, like alluding to where you might need to go.
Okay.
But but it's not really well indicated outside of that. And so the part where it's tricky is like you might need to go to a specific part of an area, but if you've already like gone over the area once and haven't found it, then it'll be a long time because you'll like go to all the other areas of the map trying to look for where you need to go and not find it. And so that part was a little bit frustrating at times. They do a good job of giving you a whole bunch of things to look at the beginning of the game. So it doesn't really matter if you miss one thing because there's like a dozen other things to investigate. But it's more like I was kind of making a checklist if I wanted to do everything before I ended the game. And so then like at a certain point, I just needed to look up like, okay, how do I get this thing or where do I need to go for this? And so like there's still some room for improvement there. Like I know like it's very deliberate that they don't give you an explicit map to like help you out. Like discovering is part of the fun. And I get that. I wish there was some way that you could build a map from exploring or like have some sort of tool to do that so that you have like a way to find things more easily, I guess.
Right.
Or just having like waypoints. Like they give you a blank map that you can look at, you know, to get a general geography of the map. Like if you could mark on that, for example, like waypoints of where you might need to go, that would be like very helpful. Even if we were like just like funneling down to a specific area of the map where you need to go.
That's so weird because I remember, I mean, back in the base game of Subnautica, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have a distinct recollection of like, you know, the compass at the top kind of always showing you a couple of different things and roughly their distance, which you can navigate by that.
they give you waypoints in the first Subnautica and they give you waypoints in this one to a degree, but then it's not for everything. Right. So there's like certain missions where the like, you know, the last step to completing a mission or something will be told through a line of dialogue or implied through a line of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of like hope that you explore it correctly to find it.
Right.
So it's a bit clunky in a few areas, but that I don't want to detract from in my Steam library, I have categories. And so I like rate games that, some games at least, not everything, but some games at least. So like this one I would give like a solid like 8 out of 10, whereas like the first one I gave like a 10 out of 10 because it was like new when it came out and it was like awesome. And so it's weird that they like improve the game, but since it's, you know, coming from the starting place of the first game, it's, you know, it's not a bad experience. Like if you like the first game, it's like it's definitely worth playing, but just kind of go in with that understanding that you might need to like look certain things up or it might not be like well laid out maybe.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just me. I don't know. And then what else? The base building is still pretty awesome. And the vehicles that they give you in this time around are pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then the one thing is like, so in the first game, there's like the Reapers, which are things that will grab you, take control of the camera, and like scream at you in the face. And it's very scary and very alarming. They have similar things in this game, and they haven't really gone beyond that formula. The formula is still effective, so I guess that's fine. But the thing that was kind of frustrating is it's like there's not a lot of ways around them either, because it's like you get something halfway through the game that completely nullifies them, or it's like, oh, I'm just going to fire this weapon. It'll be fine. But before that, there's no way around them. It's like, oh, they're just going to damage my ship until I die or I run away. No. And so that part was a little bit disappointing too, that there wasn't any alternatives to that where it's like being completely overpowered or like being completely useless. Anyway, but I had a dank base, dude. I had it half on land and half in the water. I made a glass door giant cylinder base with an aquarium running up the middle and put fish in them. So it'd be a personal hell where they're in water and they can see water in the ocean, but they can't get there.
Oh God.
And I had a glass dome observation thing that was like above the water, and I had a bed and a sweet space toy. And yeah, it was all cool. The base building's still like really solid, and like you can get really OCD with like having different cabinets for every resource and naming them and stuff like that. You can do all that stuff, so that part's fun.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, overall, I mean, I had a fun time with it. I played it for 51 hours, so that, you know,
whoa.
So having it be a good game and playing it for that long, like you can't feel too bad about that. So, right. Yeah. So minor complaints aside, and the, like, there is like a narrative to the game too. Like they try and do something, I guess, similar to like the first game, you know, it's like, you know, you're trying to do something on the planet, you find some stuff out, and then you're eventually trying to leave the planet in some way.
Yeah.
But they like, they kind of leave it at like a narrative cliffhanger to some degree, where it's like, I'm curious if they're going to try and go back to that story or not, but they like the story from the first game, like they don't follow up on at all. So I don't know. It might be like that. And they just do things like serialized, but in any case, yeah, kudos with that game. That was fun.
Cool.
All right. One last one to talk about. And I'm bummed that Jala isn't here, 'cause she recommended this. Oh. I played Portal Reloaded, which is a community made Portal game. That's like 20 or 25 levels. And it's pretty badass. Again, I guess this will be me complaining the entire time. There's room for improvement in certain places, but the premise of the game is this. You're in the portal facilities that you know and love, like all the labs and stuff. You're given a portal gun, but there's a twist with it. It can fire a third portal using the middle mouse button, and it is a green rectangular portal that is a time dimension portal.
What?
And so the portal goes 20 years in the future to whatever room that you fired it on the wall upon, whatever room whose wall you fired it upon. That's it.
Okay.
So like, yeah, like in whatever room you're sitting in, you shoot a portal on the wall, you would walk out into the same room, but 20 years later.
So it's all ruined and stuff.
Yes. And so the way they just find the game is they're like, we purposely like left these chambers, like didn't do anything with them. We just left them blank so that you do this. But yeah, everything is ruined in the future, kind of like, so like ramp, you know, floors that are like flat in the present might be like tilted in the future.
And importantly, then, like, surfaces that are intact that may block a trajectory in the present are, you know, like that has fallen apart in the future and you would be able to launch over it. Yeah.
Yeah. And like things that dispense cubes in the present might not work in the future, or they might.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where it gets really interesting is, so say you like drop a cube in the present. If you go to the future, that cube is now there because you've done something in the present that affects the future. And then the thing that gets even trippier about it is you can grab that cube in the future and you can bring it back with you to the past. And so you can set it on like a something in the past to have an effect on the present day puzzle. However, if you move that cube, that original cube in the present, that cube from the future immediately vanishes and is now updated to where it should be in the future.
That is wild.
Yeah. So very, very mind-bending. One convention that they have is if you try to take a cube from the present to the future, it explodes. So that's, or like it blows up and resets or whatever. So that is like a convention that they have, because I don't see why you couldn't do that with time travel since you yourself are going to the future.
Right.
But yeah, this one simple mechanic addition made it really, really interesting. And it's not that much development work to add that, because you're just making a secondary map. So,
right.
So maybe it's twice the work. So maybe I should hold off on saying that. But it's like, but anyway. So the puzzles are really interesting. It's a really great way to like revitalize the game and like make it feel completely fresh playing it. And it's community made, it's free, so there's not a lot of reason to not play it. I think this is a very minor complaint, but like the one, like by the end of the game, like some of the puzzles start to like, the patterns start to run together where it's like, okay, they've done this mechanic for, like, I have to bring a cube to the end of this to set it on a button because that's what they want you to do every time. So I'm going to solve the puzzle the same way that I did before, but I'm going to take the cube from the future here to make sure I do it this way.
Right.
There's sometimes a little of that. The first like four or five puzzles when I played it, it felt like I was like stumbling upon the solution and not deliberately finding it.
Mm-hmm.
But however, when I was like watching someone else play it, because I showed people in Portland this when I went down there for the wedding, I felt better about it watching someone else play it, where it's like, oh, okay, they set the map up like this, so this had to be the solution to go for it. Even if you might not, I guess, see that when you're solving it. So I think I was fine with that. And they run through pretty much all the mechanics in the first two Portal games. Like, they have the light bridges, they have the things that bounce if you jump on them. They have lasers, they have all that stuff. The story is like you know, it's sufficient, you know, like it's extremely good for a fan made game. I will put it that way. It's like, it's the best fan made game I've ever played. But like, since you're comparing it to like Portal 2, pretty tough bar, pretty high bar.
Yeah. One of the best games ever made. You might want to break it. I would give them some slack.
Yeah. So like that said, the writing is good. It's clever. It's not, you know, it's not at the same level as Portal 2, but it's still like really good for being a fan made game. So, yeah, so I was very, very surprised by this. Thought it was a lot of fun. The puzzles are really good. It's a very like good and interesting and challenging mechanic. So for some reason, I think it was like maybe the first 10 puzzles were the ones where you really had to like stretch your thinking. But once you have the mechanics under your belt, like the last like 5 to 10 or whatever were kind of on like coast mode. Totally recommend that. So
nice.
So that's all I got. That's my stable of games.
I'm into it. Yeah. No, you've been busy since we were last here.
The one that I haven't played is It Takes Two because I've been neglectful and out of town, and I'm sorry.
I told you on text, dude. It's fine. I'm looking forward to finishing it next time. But yeah,
same.
Yeah. This Portal. Good catch, Jala. On making that recommendation. There had been another like fan made Portal like level pack that was apparently really good, but it was from like 6 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, they have like a workshop, so like people can make custom puzzles and stuff like that. Like I played one that my friend made in Austin, so
yeah.
They have a lot of support for it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like this one. I mean, it's not brand new. It came out in April, but like it was worked on and released in time for the 10th anniversary of the release of Portal 2.
Oh,
so
nice.
That was, yeah. Man, just the addition of that time dimension sounds, that is such a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Way into it.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Let's see here. David, let's do you now. How about you? What you been playing?
Sure. Let's see. I picked up a game called Outward. Have any of you played this?
Outward.
I have not.
No,
I
haven't.
So it's a I guess it does have mod co-op. So it's a action third person fantasy action RPG. With the addition of significant survival elements.
Okay.
So your character can die of exposure from like either heat or excessive cold. You have to eat and drink anytime you expend stamina or take damage, a certain portion of that basically gets what they call burnt, so it can't be healed until you sleep.
Okay.
Similarly, you can catch diseases, that sort of thing. So it's, introduces a lot of survival elements. But then kind of with that, one of the interesting things is you can't actually die in the game. So if you lose all of your health, something will happen. So it could be like if you're fighting bandits, they might like take you prisoner or like sell you to slavers and you have to escape.
Okay.
Or you might have like mercenaries come by and like decide to rescue you. Or you just might kind of wake up on, the other side of the map.
Okay.
things like that.
Yeah,
that is a way more fun way to handle death.
Yeah, exactly.
Quote unquote death.
Exactly. So it's
have you like purposely killed yourself because you're like, I just want to see what happens?
I have not for that. One of them is like there's generally in every area a variant that is just take you to the nearest hub area.
Yeah, like so-and-so from town found you collapsed and you wake up with your stuff, with a little bit of money taken for the services.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I've never straight up purposely done that, but there's definitely been times where it's like it's in more in my best interest not to be particularly careful not to have that happen.
Right.
But yeah, the other thing that's kind of interesting is your character does actually gain levels. You get better gear and you can learn skills, but you don't explicitly get stronger.
Okay.
And so, and the combat is very Souls-like. So the end result of that is even after you've been playing for a long time, it's very easy to get killed.
Yeah, yeah. This like this looks similar. There was a game like in the Xbox 360 PS3 generation called Risen, or like okay. Risen 2. Or this looks a little bit more like a more weird fantasy like Mountain Blade to me.
Yeah, yeah. So it definitely has the look of a like a Mountain Blade, that sort of thing. And I'd say maybe has some of that DNA in mm-hmm. particular. It's kind of got a thing going on where there's a whole bunch of different, like, there's not one main story. There's something like five.
Okay.
So they're basically, you know, oriented around the main factions. And so it's very based around the assumption of you doing replays.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting to have an open world game like that that is meant to be. The that is meant to be like narrow slices to be right, gone exactly. over again. Yeah,
exactly. And you know, it's very much because it's the different factions. It's kind of you know, different perspectives on things. So like you start out kind of oriented around one of the tribal groups, and it's you know very traditional. You know, lots of you know, pressure to, you know, follow cultural rules, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other end of the spectrum, there's a, one of the factions is basically this merchant city that is just like, you know, you can do whatever you want, basically, you know, as, you know, kind of a might and money makes right.
Like, does that change the way that like guards and soldiers will react to you? Like based on what you do?
I would say less explicitly that, but more in terms of like the types of quests you get.
Okay.
So, you know, in that, setting, the main story is based a lot around the, kind of political intrigue and, you know, dealing with the different, you know, merchant factions and, you know, those sorts of things.
Right.
Whereas the side quests are all basically building up the slums and like helping the residents there.
Okay.
On the other hand, I don't know so much actually about the tribal one. There's one that is kind of a paladin faction, and that's apparently the one to play if you really want to deep dive into like the lore and like, why are all these monsters fighting us and those sorts of things.
Right.
So yeah, seems like a pretty solid game. You know, little quirky, but you know, that never hurt anyone.
No. Yeah, I pretty much only ever seen this like on sale, so I'm happy that you like dug into it. This actually sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, I you know, it's very very solid. I could actually see it being a game that you would like, because you know it is. It's a game that's very narrative, or I guess story oriented, without being like, hey, let's just have you know like 40 hours of you know Final Fantasy expository dump.
Yeah, yeah, it's story that you do, not story that you see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So other than that, the main thing I've been doing is this past weekend actually did another LARP thing.
Okay.
So this time had less of the people locally go, only about three of us went. So it was but you know, so a lot of hanging out with Well, I guess I should step back. This is going to become relevant. There's, you know, most of the people that go are kind of members of various factions in the game, various baronies. Mm-hmm. They are kind of, you know, sub-kingdoms. And there's generally a central goal. You know, all of the baronies are working together towards, but other than that, not necessarily, you know, all supporting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of a thing where the barony I'm a part of has, there's kind of been a weird power vacuum created because, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we had like five people join from the, you know, Huntsville area. And so it, you know, all of a sudden got a lot bigger and a lot more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so this week turned out to be a lot of political intrigue.
Okay.
And so, you know, at one point, one of the, well, it appears that maybe one of the other baronies attempted to frame us for a crime in order to have, you know, justification to attack.
The jerks.
Yeah, you know, how dare they? and so, like, that was interesting, like, you know, having a night where it's like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to bed fully dressed and wearing my boots all night because, you know, there's a very good chance that someone's going to be raiding us. And that did not happen, probably because we kind of went to said group and were like, hey, we know what's going on. But yeah, so that, yeah, that was kind of fun. And then kind of on the main plot point, there was basically the, at the center of the world where, you know, all of creation started, there's a giant metaphysical millstone.
Okay.
That, you know, kind of mills out the energy of creation. And, you know, it's starting to run out of energy, and so, you know, Raleigh is starting to fall apart.
Is it metal?
Yes. And so, you know, had to get people together to basically, you know, sacrifice some of their life force to, you know, rekindle it.
Okay.
And so I spent the most of the weekend feeling like, I played some Dark Souls. Are we sure this is a good idea?
Yeah, it kind of seems like we're just going to have to keep feeding this thing, huh?
yeah. And that's literally, they're like, oh, yeah, we had to do this like 50 years ago. It's like, well, maybe that should tell you something.
Yeah. So when you sacrifice somebody, do they, or is just like, all right, Terry, you can never come back to the game again?
Like, so what it is your character has a certain number of lives.
Okay.
And you start out with three. You get one, I think, at every even level. And then also, if you, like, volunteer for the, you know, to help out with the game or stuff like that, you can basically earn extra ones. And it's something like, if you lose all your HP and then, you know, bleed out for a minute without someone healing you, and then, I think go 15 minutes without someone reviving you, you basically lose one of your lives.
Okay.
So the end result of that is that's probably about the biggest, you know, the biggest thing you can give up. However, at the same time, it's something where, like, it's unlikely to actually, you know, it's kind of like in D&D, where it's set up to be, like, dangerous, but if you're not overtly stupid, fairly unlikely that you'd ever actually run out of all your lives. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, you know, there was, like, I know at least one person that literally, like, donated 22 lives. So I donated, I think I had 6 and donated 3. And I've so far, that is technically the first time I had quote unquote died.
Okay.
So yeah, it's, I know, it's super dorky, but you know, a lot of fun, just kind of a bunch of people running around being dorky, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was, kind of fun is one of the races in the game was initially, you know, quote unquote, gypsies.
Okay.
And there's kind of been a bit of, as people have realized that that's not exactly the most, sensitive way to talk about things and handle things.
Yeah, I could.
It's kind of been a progressive thing of like reworking the history and that sort of thing to make it less stereotypical. So, you know, one of the things was, you know, they were renamed from, you know, gypsies, which are kind of considered a slur, to Rova.
Right.
And one of the neat things now is they're kind of redoing it from, you know, initially this way it was basically like a racial variant for humans.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the way there's like night elves and, you know, wood elves and things like that, whereas now they're just starting to kind of be transitioning into, oh, the idea like, no, this is a culture and like any of the races can be a Rova.
That's good.
And so one of the, they basically do, you know, a lot of this stuff, especially the political intrigue, is tends to, you know, orient around the, you know, higher level players that have been playing literally for years. So they do newbie mods that are like, you can only play if you're 10 levels or lower, and they're kind of, you know, bespoke experiences. And so one of them they did was like, oh, no one's, you know, even heard of a non-human Rova for years, but we, you know, just had an archaeological discovery of a dwarven city, and it looks like maybe the Rova, so... us, yeah, like going and exploring that. And so one that was just kind of cool, it ended up being full of like were rats.
Okay.
And so, you know, us just, you know, fighting off you know, tons and tons of people playing rats, quote unquote, and chucking poop bombs at us.
Okay.
At points. Until we got to our final confrontation with a quote-unquote non-gender binary rat king slash queen. So we eventually decided on the name Rat Sire.
Oh, yeah. My rat leash.
And so, you know, that was cool just because, like, it was a really cool experience. And, like, you know, it's cool that, you know, they put this together to be, like, you know, making sure people that were new had, like, a really cool, you know, thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that was kind of neat is, you know, normally the storyline that's, like, you know, world-changing events, that sort of thing, happens, you know, by nature, tends to be dominated by high-level players. But, you know, so it was kind of neat to set it up as, like, here's a thing where, like, previously, you know, the rules didn't allow, you know, non-humans to be Rova, and we're changing that. And so it's kind of neat to have, you know, to introduce that, change the lore in a newbie-oriented setting. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I mean, just a good way to handle updating things in general. You're being flexible and, you know, just saying like, yeah, this is not actually like a problem. This is an opportunity to do, you know, to do cool new stuff.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So yeah. You know, was a lot of fun. I also got some good gear, and I now officially have I have adopted a kobold runt that was like abandoned by its tribe. Mm-hmm. And so it is now my son.
Yes. Who's playing the kobold?
So it's effectively like a familiar, I guess. What usually is ends up being represented by like a stuffed animal. And
awesome.
The vast majority of them, and this one in particular, like has no practical in-game effect. It's just kind of one of my characters, like, goals is to revitalize the way society views kobolds and not treat them simply as like mindless monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, it's not really relevant from an actual mechanic standpoint, but it's more relevant in terms of what my character is trying to do in the broader game.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. The first D&D campaign I played, I picked Orphan for my backstory, mm-hmm. and you get a rat with that for some reason. And so like the entire time we had idle time, I'm like, I'm going to train my rat to like fetch or do things, you know? So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And yeah, that's my favorite part is just, you know, kind of the things where it's like, the actual combat and gameplay and stuff like that is fun, but a lot of the most fun is just the random, like, these are things that are important to my character. One other thing that was kind of fun is our group. So you're required to spend a certain amount of time volunteering over the course of the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And generally that takes the role of spending some time playing the monsters. And so our group, decided to all do that at the same time, which, kind of allowed us to, you know, be people that know each other and kind of work together and then also be, you know, have an established group.
Okay.
And that allowed some really fun interactions. For example, at one point we were all playing, just like five or six people playing what are called water mephits, which are kind of these water elemental creatures.
Yeah, like water a little kind of things.
Yeah.
Super you do weak. Have to wait for people in the pond. That's a downside. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead, sorry.
So they're super weak, but they have the ability to basically just magically summon a tidal wave that, knocks, quote unquote, knocks someone back 10 feet and they have to like sit down on the ground and then, you know, stand back up before they can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so these were all these like trivially weak characters that we ended up coordinating and just like standing on opposite sides of people and just being like, you know, tidal wave.
Now you're
and
trapped.
Then, the next person, tidal wave, and just knocking people back and forth.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Similarly, after that, ended up playing as some sort of weird killer fey deer that ultimately ended up with us having dropped someone down to bleeding out, in effect in D&D terms, like zero hit points,
mm-hmm.
and then like carrying the body off with their allies like chasing after us so they could revive them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically shenanigans ensued.
Yeah, yeah. Well organized newbies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So That is all I got. That was my misspent weekend and week.
Cool. Nice.
That sounds awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like a good time. I don't have much. I have mostly been doing stuff around the house, getting the new studios, quote unquote, put together, which has been really involved. A thing that I have been doing that we talked a little bit about on this week's episode, Watch Out for Fireballs, but I can talk about here because, Ben, I know that you have played this, Bowser's Fury. I've been, dipping into that. It's good. I like this quite a bit. I had no idea what to expect. I'm real surprised that the camera is the way that it is in comparison to Super Mario 3D World, where you have these.
I can't remember. Is it free floating and it just kind of moves and like adapts to certain places?
No, or like can you control it? It's like centered around you, so you can control it around you, like in Mario Odyssey. As opposed to the base game of Mario 3D World, which you know where the camera kind of defines.
It's very fixed.
Yeah, the camera's really fixed because it's showing you the stage like a little diorama, right?
There's times on Fury where it does like hints though, right? Where it, like it'll take control and move to certain positions, or is
that
not true? Yeah,
yeah. Like it'll edge or it'll go in or out closer depending on what it's supposed to do. Like it'll like in chase sequences, it'll come in behind you, like that kind of thing. So I was not expecting this to be as much like an open world Mario game like it is. And that is not generally my favorite kind of Mario game. However, this is just a nice enough kind of compromise between the two styles where you're going to these individual islands and each island has its own course. But it also has that fun little aspect of, you know, the collectibles that you're going for, these cat shines. Just this game's version of stars, they're named after roughly the challenge that you're doing to get them. So it's a little bit like kind of solving a little riddle whenever you go back to different places and stuff like that. And man, how great is it that there is like it's like Breath of the Wild, where just every once in a while Bowser gets mad and starts raining hellfire down on the stages, and you have to like navigate the stages under those conditions, either getting a star or going and fighting him as a Super Saiyan cat.
It seems like that's like a pattern in some of the Nintendo games like that, where I like, for some reason it doesn't land too well with me, where it's like I wish it was more like a bespoke event sort of thing instead of like a randomly timed thing, because it for me it just gets annoying, and I like, all right, I'm just gonna like hunker down somewhere, I guess, until this blows over.
Yeah,
but in both games, and I don't really know what that's like adding, I guess, for the like enjoyment of the game.
I mean, so for me it reminds me a little bit of like Majora's Mask, where you have that you know, kind of like countdown clock in the back of your head, knowing, all right, Bowser's probably gonna wake up, it's gonna change things, so I want to move quick, and I want to get going there. And that is not for everybody. Majora's Mask notably stresses a lot of people out, and I understand that.
I like the bargain that like Death Stranding does, where it's like there's areas like this, but you can see them on a map, and so you can either go to them if you want, or you can avoid them if you want. But yeah.
And also, like, when Bowser's attacking, it's not necessarily all downside, right? Like, you can get extra collectibles by kind of, like, guiding his fire to destroy certain blocks that only he can destroy. There are new platforms that pop up that, you know, can sometimes make the platforming a little bit easier to get around. It is not all downside. So kind of having that unpredictability and that variability does, it adds something kind of neat. And like it is just the right level of adventurous and comforting for me, because when I'm going to a Mario game, I want something comfortable. And I'm also pretty excited that it's a short game as well. a short game that is packed in with another game that I happen to just adore, the Mario 3D World, you know.
So how many different areas have you been to so far in Bowser's Fury?
Like 7, I think. Okay. Something like that. Yeah.
I think there's like, because it starts like completely like sludged, and then some areas will get revealed, right? So like, how many of those areas, how many reveals have you had?
2 or 3.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Like there was the first level that you go through, and then you fight Bowser, then it reveals like 3 more islands, and then it reveals like a little chase course that you go through, and then there are 3 more after that that you do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I'm at about like 7 areas so far. I've collected like 20 cat shines so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's good.
There's definitely like a lot of like lightning bolt moments in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said this on air, but I was wondering how you feel about it. Is like, I don't know if I think I like that variant like long, or I hope they don't stick with it, because like things like you don't have like different skyboxes for each world.
Yeah.
Or like you kind of lose some of like the fuller details that they usually pack in something like Odyssey with this format. And it seems like they did the best with what they could, but it seems like they're a little bit limited.
Yeah,
in that capacity.
Yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying. Even in the base level or the base game of Super Mario 3D World, the variety is a huge, it is a huge benefit to it. Where mm-hmm. different levels have different biomes, some of which they only use like once. Like there's mm-hmm. In the main game, there's only before the bonus levels, there's only one level that's like in the Super Mario Kart, SNES biome, right? And I can kind of see what you're saying, where because all of it takes place around this one gigantic lake and on these islands, there can be a little bit of visual monotony. From what I've seen so far, they do a good job of mixing in a number of mechanics around that, though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I can see, especially if you are accustomed to Odyssey, where you're going from, desert to desert land to,
They set the bar so high with that game.
Yeah. And even before that, like Galaxy, the different planets and different constellations had a huge amount of variability as well. You can tell by looking at Bowser's Fury that it is a more modest product, as modest as a product mm-hmm. that is made by hundreds of people can be, Yeah. But it's cool and good.
Yeah. Music's awesome too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I went into it not knowing too much of what to expect outside of what you had said, Ben. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to play enough of it so I could talk about it on the 3D World episode of WAF. And I just kind of found myself unable to stop.
I will say I am impressed by the Mario cat model. Like, you need a high degree of confidence, I think, to pull that off. And I think they do it well.
Well, not just cat models for Mario, cat models for all the playable characters, plus a number of the enemies too. Mm-hmm. They have cat versions of the bullet bills. Enemies
get cat suits.
Like the enemies can be catified and their behavior is changed. So like, Goombas that have cat that have the cat power up, they can do the jump and like jump kick kind of thing where they do like a dive attack. Bullet bills that have cat ears can like steer to kind of follow you. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about this being part of the catnin.
That barely made sense, Dennis. That was such a reach. It took me a second to realize what you were even doing.
Look, you got to take those outside shots sometimes.
You miss 100% of them you don't take. Yeah. Yeah. So any questions about Bowser's Fury or my reaction there too?
Do every time you hear Bowser's Fury, do you think of Bowser's furry?
No, whenever I hear Bowser's Fury, whenever I say it, I have to make double sure that I'm not saying Browser's Fury, which is what happens when I have too many Chrome tabs open. That's dumb. Yeah. So that's all that I have. I'll keep it short there.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a stats geek. I like looking at stats.
You've made a number of spreadsheets based on your performance in multiplayer games. Yeah.
You are a man has who happened. Has made spreadsheets.
Yes. spreadsheet guy. And I know video games are a great source for statistics. And generally, you know, if the game is made well, it's tracking everything. So sometimes to sell it to you, or sell it to corporations who want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. But sometimes just because it's fun to track. And, so the question is, what statistic from your time gaming do you wish you could track? This could be either specific to a single game or something from across games.
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Patrick, who says, I would love to see how much time I spent in queues in Final Fantasy 14. I usually do something else while those are up, like play my Switch, but I'm still curious how much time this took up. Yeah. Queues or looking for group things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see
how
that.
How much time playing this game was I actually playing this game?
Yes. Yeah. And that probably would be just a horrifying number. let's see here. Ben, what does Mike say?
Mike says, I love going through my stats. One that might be cool to see is what the longest distance is between Kratos and his axe in God of War 18, 2018. There were some points where I would call it back to me and it took seconds. I wonder how far it traveled.
It'd be weird if it came back and it had like flat Stanley tape to it and like a bunch of different like postmarks, a couple different passport stamps and stuff. Yeah. let's see. David, what does Jarrus say?
Jarrus says, I'd love to know my win percentage in Magic the Gathering, both lifetimes and by year, so I can see how it has trended over the 20 plus years I've been playing.
Ooh, huh. That seems like one that would regress to the mean really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Or one that would just be depressing.
Yeah.
I feel like most people it's going to be like around 50% or so, unless you're like a pro player. Just because like I mentioned this in the comments, but like anything that you play it on, it does like ranking and stuff. So like if you're good, they'll put you against other good people. So
yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But they reset the rankings in Arena, so you have like a few matches where you feel really good about yourself, where you just trounce other silvers.
Yeah. And then like, no, just I'm mortgaging my future. All of these stomps that I'm doing is just putting me against harder and harder people next time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I kind of assumed this would include like offline Magic as well. And that kind of, you know, the matchmaking and making sure it's a fair match doesn't exist as much in like the comic shop meta where you kind of show up and you play who's there. And
yeah,
so
if you're just doing public matches. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Dennis, what does Gwen say?
Gwen says, I would love to know what game I'm statistically best at compared to other players. The answer is I know it's Rock Band because I have a 5% trophy for getting to the highest skill tier on drums.
Hell yeah.
It's awesome.
It's funny. This question started out as a question about trophies, like, and then I was like, no one pays attention to trophies anymore. But yeah. Gwen proving me wrong there.
Yeah. Man, I there was a while there where I was playing a little bit more Rock Band, and then I put the stuff away because I was doing housework. I need to get those drums back out. Mm. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, somebody
that's our generation is we have like Rock Band musical instruments like in the closets or something.
Yeah, yeah. In this case, it's out in the garage. But yeah, I just also could because of having stuff torn down. I've also not played guitar in a little while, so I need to get those cobwebs out. Oh man,
there's also that moment where you haven't played it in so long that you can never be completely confident that there isn't some defect, and you'll be questioning every missed note.
Right.
When you play,
I keep my instruments in very good condition.
Wow, someone took offense.
I didn't take offense. I just wanted to make sure that the record reflected the reality.
Look, we all lie to ourselves. It's fine.
Alex writes, Nuclear Throne had stats, but I wish it had 10 times as many. I particularly wish it had a readout for what I would describe as threat level, which would be something like how many enemies are aggroed times how aggressive they are times how much health they have. because I feel like this game has a threshold where it rewards you for being tactically cautious most of the time, but every once in a while it will put you in a situation where the threat level pegs, and that's when all the explosions and fun deaths happen. This sounds similar. There's a stat that you're ranked on in the Hotline Miami games. I forget exactly what it is called, but it is like, how many kills did you make while you were exposed, like while enemies were running at you? So you gain a bunch of
that's cool.
You gain a bunch of stats, you know, not just by, you gain a bunch of points, not just by picking people off one by one, but by killing people in as dangerous of a scenario as possible. That sounds like what Alex is attempting to put together.
Risk reward meter.
Yeah. I've got a cat on my head. Let's see, Ben, what does Ricky say?
Ricky says, I'd like to know how much of my game time was spent on the critical path, side quests, fiddling with menus and inventory, and bullshit fillers like collectibles, fetch quests, and backtracking. Also, most importantly, the amount of time as a rampaging Jala-style murder hobo. Nice. That's a... what game is that referencing? Hobo Cop?
Anyway. That is Disco Elysium.
Yeah, that's the one. No. a game like Portal Proportions is time near perfectly. Skyrim, the way I play it, is like 95% side quests. And Destiny is about 90% bullshit fillers and 5% menus load screens.
It's...
I guess that means 5% gameplay, which is matching the load screens. That's a bummer. aggregating this info across all players might be a good way to tell whether a game is going to be worth my time.
Yeah.
That sounds cool. Yeah.
Akin to the active time versus, versus secondary time. Yeah. Let's see. God, Dottie is just being a fucking nut right now. Sorry. She is like doing little spins on the headrest of my chair. Let's see here. David, what does Sean say?
Sean says, having a PS5 and loving the fact that load screens are now pretty much non-existent. I would like to know how much time I've spent on a load screen with each game so I can calculate how much of my life I have wasted just staring at a screen.
Hmm.
I'm even old enough to have played on the Commodore 64 and spent more time loading the game than actually playing it. See, I feel like for the PS5, you'd have to immolate that by how much time did you spend reloading the page to buy the PS5?
Yeah, so you arrive in time debt. Yeah. yeah.
I've seen people talking about the muscle memory of like you start the game,
Dottie,
and
stop.
You pull out.
Dottie, stop.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you bleeding? No. Are you okay?
No. Hey, Dottie. I really... Okay, so I need to describe this. I have because this room is going to be painted here in a couple of weeks, it didn't make sense to affix my sound my soundproofing, and I thumbtacked up a blanket in front of me and some beach towels on the wall behind me. Dottie decided behind my computer and all of this to start climbing up the blanket, and she got to the top. Oh, no. And she didn't have an end game for that. So she just released. So when I panicked, she was getting near the top and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to like grab her so she doesn't drop on all of my shit. She did manage to land without hurting anything, but she's a lot. She's a handful.
Yeah, the carpet on a wall is like an invitation for the cat.
Yeah, a blanket on a wall. She just climbed up it like she was fucking Link in Breath of the Wild. I apologize, David. Continue.
No problem.
Or start.
Oh, no,
that
I was going.
Oh yes. Yeah.
No, I my thought was about the people who have complained that their muscle memory tells them I start the game, then I get out my phone to look at something while it loads, and it's like I'm here. I don't have any time to look at my phone anymore.
Well, they can just start emulating Commodore 64 games on emulators that mimic the old tape load time, and they have plenty of time to look at their phone. let's see here. I am all mixed up. That was you, David, who said Sean. Hey, Dennis, what does Chris say?
Chris says, I need to know how much time I spent wandering around the same rooms over and over again, looking for some hidden treasures or whatever. RE8 brought that to light again for me. So much time lost, and I still didn't find everything in some rooms. This is why I can never stream for other people. No one wants to watch me make zero progress for hours.
Oh, that's what I thought.
But just do it in my hot tub.
Yeah. It just makes everything better. Yeah. Let's see. Greg says, I wish there was a way for games to tell you, to tell what you were doing during the game. I know the time for all my Steam games is inflated about 25% due to just leaving it on while I'm doing other stuff. Also time spent in menus, et cetera, versus playing would be cool. So yeah, just more time breakdowns. Basically people want to be their own managers, like watching the usage reports on the, on like the company, you know, CMS or whatever. Yeah.
it's everyone. I feel like people gravitated to the most depressing stats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. And then, God damn it, Dottie, what are you doing?
My name is not God damn it.
Sorry. Ben, sorry. What does Jack say?
Jack says, it's a duck feed standby, but I want to see the death by area breakdown after I finish a Souls game. Or really, any game with delineated levels or areas. Give me that US Today bar chart.
Yeah, I don't want to see that. I could go without that very well, actually. Because there would be one where it was like, where I just was just way above the average. And even if I was below the average on a lot of the other ones, I would still feel really bad. Just because of... I don't know, depression. yeah. For me,
you load it up and there you can't actually see the map anymore. It's just all red.
Right. So for me, this is simple in that it is just one kind of metric, but it would be impossible because it would have to span all of the games back to when I first started playing. But calculate how many unnecessary jumps or rolls I have taken. You know, if you're just, if heaven is real and you arrive at the gates and they have the big book or whatever, this is probably a stat you can ask, like, hey, do you know what's my number here on this? But yeah, just compulsively, maybe even throw in like compulsive reloads on there as well.
Reloads would be good.
Yeah.
Bullets wasted if the magazine is actually thrown away.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But just any of those, cause you know, if I'm running across a big open area, I'm doing jumps and double jumps or I'm doing rolls and stuff. And mm-hmm. I would like to see just over the course of my entire lifetime of gaming, what that number is.
If this was Elder Scrolls, you'd be really good at jumping at this point.
I would.
Or said another way, no jump in Elder Scrolls is unnecessary.
Well, you'd want to see like a percentile too, of like how you compare against others, right?
This is more for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the less context, the better. On this particular number, I just want to know.
Just throw a number my way. I'll make a story out of it.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
So mine was going to be maybe weirder, but like I want some sort of Neuralink thing that could like monitor my brain activity, and then I would want to know like my like dopamine levels or like serotonin levels and stuff while I'm playing games to try and like figure out what's the like happiest I've been playing a game or what's the most scared I've been playing a game.
Yeah.
Like do that for all of my gameplay experience. I think that would be cool.
So the Wii Vitality sensor, but that takes your blood every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, however they can do it.
Yeah. No, it would be mostly
preferably
blood.
Without blood.
Mostly blood. David, how about you?
So I don't know if this goes with the spirit of it, but what I would like to see is some sort of mapping or whatever in games like Assassin's Creed and The Witcher of like where was your horse at various times?
Oh, yeah. Oh, like if they not just tracking where you have been, but just looking at the horse and seeing like where it goes to.
Yeah. Right, and like, and this implies that the game isn't just blatantly like, you know, teleporting your horse in over the next hill.
Right.
But kind of assuming that were not the case, the idea of like how does your horse end up always being about, you know, 2 seconds away in Assassin's Creed?
Yeah. Assuming stable horse ontologies.
Right, exactly.
This is like the axe from God of War.
Yeah.
Should make a video game about that where you're the horse and you like have to get in position by time.
And Dennis.
Yeah, so I want like a real-time odds betting win percentage chance. Like, you know, if you're watching poker or watching regular sports games, they'll be like, oh, after that draw, your chance of winning went down 30%.
Yeah, yeah.
And just do that for any roguelike or game where you're building a deck or a character as you play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one, it could be used as a training thing and just, you know, get feedback on what the, you know, what the most successful builds are. And then two, you can shift that over to more of a challenge and be like, all right, what is the lowest percentage I can still pull off a win with?
That is so wild because like poker is a relatively simple game. You know, mm-hmm. the reason you can calculate that those odds is just because, you know, I mean, people can do it in their head, like they're 52 options, yeah. And you can account for what you know and for what you for what you don't. In a game, I cannot imagine how you would begin calculating that for Slay the Spire.
Yeah, it's like people who had these relics at this level, these cards at this level.
What I'm telling you is your ask is unrealistic and I need you to do another one.
Yeah, we want hyper realistic answers, yeah. Like bloodletting for dopamine, like my answer.
No, I could see that. Yeah. Nice.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Good. Good question, Dennis. Thank you for posting.
Good answers, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for answering. If you would like to answer these in the future, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Just today, as of the day we're recording, we got a launch video, like, and an announcement of a price and the day when pre-orders will be taken for an indie game console. Like, this is not like an Ouya. This is the Playdate. This is a tiny handheld black and white screened machine that has the D-pad, two buttons, and a crank on the side of it. And they have quite the number of like cool independent developers, people like you know, Zach Gage and Lucas Pope and Nels Anderson making games for this really neat looking little handheld game, little handheld system. So it's going to be $179 at launch, and the pre-orders are going to open in July. And yeah, I like this looks cool and good to me. I don't know.
What is the charging station that this is on? I'm looking at, pictures in the article you linked.
Yeah.
And the home base for this is some real like Walkman energy.
Mm-hmm. I love the little cover to it. It just looks like a really cool, like nifty piece of hardware. That also, like, you know, like, I think that what you might be looking at as well is just you can put it into a little stand that makes it look like an old school clock radio.
Kind of looks like BMO from Adventure Time.
It big BMO energy. Yeah. Yeah.
So what is this crank?
I mean, the crank is just a different different input for certain games. So I mean, obviously you could do like a fishing game with that, but like there's one that is being built around it where like it can be used to control the flow of time.
Like, it's, I like thought it was all, it also charges the console, right?
I don't think it does.
Oh, maybe? I thought that was the big idea. It's like, hey, this tiny little lo-fi thing. It's like the light phones that have, you know, a zillion hours of battery,
right?
That you could, you know, you didn't need to recharge it. I mean, you can, but you don't need to. You can just crank it for a bit, and wind it back up.
Yeah. I've not seen that it that it charges, but I would, you know,
I will check this.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. That was like the primary thing I remembered about it, but that it would also be interesting as an input. That would be the weirdest additional control since the Vita came out.
Yeah. Something else that's cool about this is that Panic, the team that is making the console, not only do they have people that they have like officially contracted with to make games for it, but they're just releasing the development kit and people can make their own games and sideload content into it. So if it, you know, takes off, this can possibly be a cool way to play some simple handheld stuff. It just looks neat to me. I like Panic as a company, like even back when they were just making like Mac and iPhone apps and stuff, but like they got into game publishing with Firewatch. They did Untitled Goose Game. It's a neat company, and this is a really ambitious thing that I hope succeeds. And I will probably be ordering this bad boy.
Oh, you're right. It does not change. In fact, they reference that on the site. Yes, it's a crank. Is it a gimmick? No. Does it charge Playdate's battery? Nope.
I would argue that it is a gimmick. Gimmicks don't have to be useless. Like it's a new control thing, but like, you know, it can still be gimmicky. And
well, now I was all excited to charge the battery.
It'd probably take yeah, I feel let down. That's what I thought it was.
Enough guys, let's make a console that has a crank that actually charges the batteries.
Enough people thought that they had to put the warning label on the site.
Yeah. Or no, that's going to be the Playdate Pro. Is it actually does charge the battery? Like, how do you not do that? The charging would make that operational is probably like 500 pounds or whatever.
Well, yeah. Also, I mean, like this is a real slim little unit as well, and I can imagine the magnets and whatever dynamo you needed to make that work would
more like a play don't.
I don't know. I think this looks cool and I'm excited to see more. Give me a way to experience cool, unique little indie games and also like emulate these so they can be, you know, put out on Steam and what have you. Would be good.
Yeah, every game on this is kind of committed to, I mean, not that this is unique, but committed to a bit of a pixel art aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Just because of the nature of the screen, which is fine. Like there is a lot. That is a very broad tent to be under.
Yeah. And limitations make good art. Let's see here. I'm going to do yours last, Ben, because it is not strictly related to video games.
Punished.
No, not punished. just to make sense. David, what's happening in the world of Warhammer 40K?
Yeah, so Fat Shark, the people that made Warhammer Vermintide are now basically making a Warhammer 40K version called Warhammer 40,000 Darktide.
Okay.
That's the main thing. This is mainly a Cole style, here's a thing that's going to exist. However, they've apparently brought on, I think it's Dan Abnett, who wrote a whole bunch of the fiction for 40K to kind of, as much as possible, make sure that it, you know, has the right feel, that sort of thing. And one of the things they've announced is that you cannot play as a space marine in it. You basically play as a member of the Imperium, which are more or less the regular people. That have to fight off all of these various monsters. Although in the game, the different battalions have very strong themes. So there's like a group that's all Rambos or all like, you know, World War One era Russian people, you know, stuff like that. But
yeah,
anyways, that's basically what we have so far. More Vermintide is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's their game and they can make the decisions they want, but I think the video game players everywhere are wondering what it would feel like to play a game where you were a marine in space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really surprising they haven't explored that space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm just making it so that your game, revolved around the less well-known, less predictable aspects of the Warhammer universe. Sounds cool and good to me.
Yep.
I feel like this kind of promise is never actually delivered in games. Like, in terms of, you're going to start it as a normal person, but by the end of this game, you're going to be effectively a Space Marine.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the beginning hours of Far Cry 2, where it was like, oh, this is rad. My weapon can jam at any time. I might get a bout of malaria or whatever it was in the middle of a fight, and I'm running scared. Like, this is such a cool, unique experience. And then it was like, two more hours in, and I had a full arsenal of new weaponry, and it was just a different game. So I love this idea. I love the disempowerment fantasy. I've never seen a game stick to it all the way through.
So some of it, though, is also that Space Marines and Warhammer are just so incredibly overpowered.
Yeah.
Like, they're literally like 9 foot tall and completely immune to all disease, poison, and radiation.
Yeah, but like they're fascist cyborg supermen.
Right. So there's a lot of wiggle room under Space Marine is what you're saying.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And as Cole just kind of implied, this also hopefully will help them dodge some of the blatant fascism.
Yeah. Well, so dodge the things that are criticisms of fascism that people take as, hey, isn't that cool?
Isn't right. That exactly. Here? Like, yeah, right. This is the poster child for it's impossible to make a parody of fascism without fascists thinking it's cool.
See the meme where, it's literally a Warhammer meme where it's a Space Marine like lobbing a grenade that takes an arc that says fascism is bad, but then somebody's like looking at it and it's a straight line. It's like, oh my gosh, look how cool these guys are. Just misinterpretation. Misinterpretation gang. Hey Dennis, what's this new management sim that was my story before I saw the playdate thing?
Ah, good. I'm glad it was going to get covered one way or another. Yeah, Terra Nil. It's a new game coming out, and this is from the developer behind Broforce. Fun, capable studio, but they're describing it as a reverse city builder. And the idea here is you start on kind of a bombed out, not very functioning, definitely not very green section of Earth or world. I don't know if this is explicitly on Earth. And
it takes place in the aftermath of Broforce, ironically. Yeah,
you start building buildings and building up a city. But the objective, the goal of all of this is to kind of rejuvenate the planet. And so while you do have to build structures to kind of accomplish that, the end goal is to kind of remove them as completely as possible and have a lush, vibrant ecosystem that almost doesn't bear your handiwork or doesn't reflect that you kind of painstakingly brought it back into existence.
Yeah.
So that's just a really, really cool concept. And it sounds like there's mechanics around, these buildings have a purpose, but then they also are meant to be taken down and you get kind of resources back or effects when they are taken down as well.
Yeah. This looks awesome. The trailer for it, for Terra Nil, it sold me on it pretty much immediately. And I like the idea of taking city building and management and kind of using that gameplay language to restore biodiversity and undo the catastrophic damage of mankind's presence.
Yeah. So, I'll be interested to watch this one as it gets closer. Sounds like it'll be out June 16th. So by the time you're listening to this, it will be very close.
Yeah. I'm super excited. And Ben, what's the story you brought?
Yeah, I was just going to bring up, this is a thing that's out. It's not even related to video games directly, but it's going to make a hearty recommendation for watching Bo Burnham's comedy special on Netflix that came out like a week and a half ago or so, or 2 weeks ago.
No spoilers. It is on my watch list.
All right. I wasn't planning I would not spoil such a thing like this, right?
Yeah, the most superfluous warning ever there.
Has anybody seen it within the group or?
No, I haven't.
Right. I do not even know who this is.
Yeah, I knew that he had directed Eighth Grade that came out a couple of years ago, and I still need to watch that. But yeah, I don't know. It's good comedy, good piece of art. You know that feeling when you like are consuming media and you're like, wow, this is like really good. Like this is like really good. You know, it's yeah. like that. Even if not everything lands, like it's very impressive.
Yeah.
If nothing else. So yeah.
Nice.
That's cool.
Related to this, did you guys see that I Think You Should Leave is getting a second season in July?
No, I did not.
And by related to this, I mean in it's comedy that's happening on Netflix. But yeah, we're getting more episodes of that very good show. Yeah, very cool. I will throw this onto the pile and all of my stand up time on Netflix has been watching the John Mulaney specials. So it'll be nice to have somebody different to see there. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Cool. So how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel good about it. Pathetic.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this level number 374. I would appreciate you coming back next week if you can. If you can do it, in addition to that, you can like us on Facebook. You can tweet about the show. You can help a neighbor carry their groceries in or take their garbage can down to the side of the road.
And while you're doing it, mention the podcast.
No, I was just going more into just like a general, like be helpful kind of thing. Call a family member or a friend you haven't talked to for a while. Wake up early one morning. If you have a chance, you know, just do something, take a walk. All these are things you can do. Yeah. Am I forgetting anything?
I mean, there are a lot more things you can do, so I think you need
to
keep going.
Right. I'm just talking about version 1.0.
Okay. Oh yeah, no, that we're definitely a minimum viable product.
Kick this bad boy out the door. All right. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on the Duckfeed Twitch channel, Duckfeed TV.
I'm Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words.
I'm Dave Meismith. You can find me on the level.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I have four. Let's see here. Oh, what?
I've been looking at pictures of food and donuts for like the last like 5 minutes because you mentioned the one publisher. What's their name? I forget the
Panic?
The one that. Yeah. This is like the third game that they've made outside of Firewatch and Untitled Goose Game or whatever that they published.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. I appreciate that you consider food and donuts as two separate things.
food.game. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Nor, something like that.
Yeah.
So the four titles that I have, I Don't Need a Reason. I have, That Day Is Today, huh? related to the, Slay the Spire. Kind of thing.
Oh, yep.
I have Become Enlightened and Kill Everything. and I also have Stable Horse Ontologies.
Yep, I had Stable Horse Ontologies as well.
Okay. As did I. Okay. I also had Bowser's Furry.
Okay.
I had Browser's Furry.
Okay. Did you have anything else, David?
Nope.
Okay.
I don't know if we've done a title referencing Dottie before, but I had Dottie, What Are You Doing? captured.
Okay. Ben, what you got?
I had Room 2.0 and Big BMO Energy. I would like to vote for Become Enlightened, or my vote will be cast for Become Enlightened and Kill Everything, but
I like
I'm fine with whatever.
I like Become Enlightened and Kill Everything. Stable Horse Ontologies has the votes, though. Mm-hmm. If I move my vote, so there are three people had Stable Horse Ontologies, two for Become Enlightened and Kill Everything. Does anybody else want to put in a case for Become Enlightened and Kill Everything?
I'm happy to go with that one.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. I would feel bad about Stable Horse Ontologies because I knew when I said that it was title bait. So, like, it actually described what would be necessary for that stat, but also I just kind of knew. So, I would feel less dirty if Become Enlightened to Kill Everything was the title.
I mean, in that case, I think we should definitely go with Stable Horse Ontologies.